Blog Talk Radio.
Connections Radio. As you know, we do our show every Thursday night from 9:30 to 10:30. And our format is that we bring on a guest every week to talk about, you know, something exciting in the field. We try to bring everybody from some pretty well-knowns to people you may never have heard of, just because we love to give exposure to all the people who have so many different gifts and bring so much to the world. If you want to find out about this show or about any other show that we have, you can go to our website, which is www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and just get started with our show and introduce my host, Pam. Pam, are you there?
I am. Good evening, everyone. Good evening, Mark. And
Pam, before you go there, can you tell everybody about your new show? We're really excited about the fact that anybody who's been following Pam knows that she's been working with me as my host and everything on the Thursday night show. It's been such a great team working together. She had her own show on Mondays, and she just launched her own radio network and her own radio show. And can you talk about that for a little bit, Pam, before you go ahead and introduce our guest?
Well, thank you, Mark. Yes. And I have to say that Mark's inspiration and teaching me how to handle Blog Talk Radio, it wouldn't have been possible for me to expand into radio like this without him. It's going to be like a sister station to Spiritual Connections. It's called Pamela LaTour Radio, and you can find out all about the shows involved at PamelaLaTourRadio.com. We have Secrets of the Soul, which is my Monday night show, is moved to, I'm just going to do a once-a-month Wednesday evening show on the first Wednesday of the month, which will start this next Wednesday. And we have all kinds of shows. Most of them are monthly shows. We have one weekly show that started this morning called Insights and Umbrellas with Dr. Kelly Brady, and it's sort of an intersection show between quantum physics and psychology and Chinese medicine, and it's really quite funny and interesting. So anyway, if you're interested in looking at all the shows involved, please go to PamelaLaTourRadio.com and you can take a look at everything that's there. And if you didn't catch that, I know Spiritual Connections also has a page where you can go and just catch the whole schmeal, which was really nice of Mark to do that for me. Anyway, that's it. So let's get into the show tonight. Tonight, we have a very special guest. Her name is Seema, and I hope I pronounced this correctly, Thandarana. She's an author of a brand new book called Irrefutable Proof of the Law of Attraction. And I can't wait to hear about this because it sounds so interesting. Seema, are you there?
I am.
Well, welcome to Spiritual
Connections.
Seema,
it's great to have you on the show. Yeah.
Thank you so much,
Mark,
for inviting me to come talk and play with you guys on the radio here for an hour.
Yeah, well, you know, when we call you book and everything.
We're happy to have you.
It's good to be here.
Good. Let's start by talking to you about how you got involved in this amazing subject, the proof of the law of attraction, and what motivated you to write the book. What's your story?
The source?
Yeah. How did you get involved in that subject?
The source for this material really is the what comes from within. And it's, to me, even this radio show here tonight, one more bit of the evidence that you'll find in this book of everything coming together so perfectly. You know, the idea for this book actually happened over a cup of coffee that I was having with a former student. During my day job, I teach high schoolers, and there's a student I had some 15 years back who is a very talented writer, theater producer, actor, all of the such. And as we sat over this cup of coffee, he had said, you know, Miss Chandarana, you have the greatest stories, and you've been telling these to our classes since I had you back when. You really should write them down to share them, because people can really benefit from hearing your stories in that this is the way humans evolve. They talk, they chew over what's happened, they learn from it, they grow from it, they expand, and you've got some great ones to share. And he was so inspiring, he pumped me up, and I thought, really, because I've been teaching math for 15 years, I thought, what do I know about writing? Apart from the fact that I have 17 journals in my desk drawer, I've been writing since high school, right? So when I finally sat down to write, I found it just flowed out really naturally. And he gave me such positive feedback that I kept going. And when I called him to tell him 5 years later that the book was done and thanked him for prompting me to really go forward with something that would have been a dormant dream if he hadn't kind of sparked it alive, he responded with, well, I had told you when I graduated that I would come out to New York City and be on Broadway, and so I'm actually sitting here in New York waiting for his play to come off tomorrow night because he sent me a ticket to come see it. So it's all kind of come full circle, and you know, the law of attraction, as I think of it, is like gravity. Yeah, it's always at play, whether we're aware of it or not. And whether we study its principles or not, it affects us. In fact, we could spend an entire lifetime never having studied the law of attraction and still have it work so beautifully in our lives. And that's what I love about it the most. But the who I wrote this book for particularly are those who have heard of the law of attraction. I mean, The Secret boomed, right, years ago. And it caught the popular wave, and some of us really are still riding that wave out. But there are others who just fell off and said, you know, it's hooey, it doesn't work. I heard one guy described it as Santa Claus in the sky. You'd send a wish and he'd bring it for Christmas the next year. And he's like, that's just not the way life works. Right? So there are all of these people out here who want so badly to believe that the law of attraction can make their lives better, but they're just not sure that it works. So if you'll permit me, there's a quote that I start the book with here from Abraham, of Abraham Hicks, and it says, words do not teach. It's life experience that brings you your knowing. So we encourage you to reflect into your own life experience and remember those things that you've experienced before and to begin watching from this point forward for the absolute correlation between the thoughts you're thinking and the life experience you're living. For it's our knowing that there's not a shred of evidence that exists anywhere in your universe that's contrary to the law.
That's lovely.
And so that's what I did. I went searching back, and I found as much evidence as I could from my own life to prove to myself that my thoughts, whether they were unconscious, subconscious, deliberate, or of things that are unwanted, we're truly creatively, powerfully manifesting every moment, every experience of my life. And it was convincing enough to me that when things that didn't seem so appealing would show up in my life, it would make me feel even that much more empowered because I could trace it back to a thought that produced an emotion that didn't feel so good. And now here I was looking at the byproduct of that. And so it really so liberating to finally get the sense that I'm in control. Not so much in control of what shows up, but in control of what I'm thinking about, what I'm projecting out there, and the absolute mm-hmm. correlation of that coming back to me.
I see. Tell me something. You know, the whole concept of the secret, because you mentioned that a minute ago,
mm-hmm.
the concept of the secret being ask, believe, receive, you know, mm-hmm. those three sort of very simplistic lines. My experience is that it's overly simplistic because it doesn't count on the fact that you've already created all kinds of negativity about the issue that you want, which is why it hasn't just showed up initially. And they don't teach you how to deal with how to get out of your own way. Do you address that in the book in any way?
You know what I intend in this book, there are 17 chapters, and each
mm-hmm.
chapter is a short story. You know, it's easy to read. You can sit down with
mm-hmm.
a cup of coffee and read it cover to cover, or for a lot of the busy moms that I know, you can sit and read
mm-hmm.
one chapter of 3 or 4 pages each night before you go to bed. And at the end of each story, you'll feel uplifted, encouraged, delighted, surprised at how things ended up, right? And so I think what you're talking about there, Pam, is this kind of being in the middle of things unfolding. And you're right, sometimes it's a messy vibration because I'm thinking about one thing, but I still carry this debris.
Exactly.
Right, of negative perceptions of what that one thing that's wanted is. And so you get a mix showing
mm-hmm.
up in the manifestation, right? But by the hindsight 2020, right, when I sat down to write each of these 17 stories, the story was done. So I could already have seen how it ended. And this was truly the motivation for sitting down to write it, was that I would think back on a time, which is what Abraham had suggested. I would think back on a time when in the middle of the story, I wasn't sure that it was working out, that what I was looking at showing up wasn't exactly what I wanted and it felt messy. But that as
mm-hmm.
I moved through it, continuing to do the work, and the, you know, Abraham has set out so many great processes, and it's really as simple as just feel good. Do whatever you can to feel better in this moment. It all clears up, right? Because ultimately, everything is always working out. And it's getting to the end of the story where everything does always work out that reassured me every time. And I'd get up from the computer and I'd go back to living my life knowing that whatever it was I was currently in the middle of living was always working out. Right? But for me, the personal proof of knowing what it was I had been doing and what it was I was creating was what finally sold me on the fact that I'm in control of it. And this is my invitation to those who read the book, that they can take all those messy thoughts and the ones of the things wanted and connect the dots, right? Trace them back to this is what's going on in my life. And I did ask for this, but I didn't exactly ask for that. And these things all came together and it wasn't quite the way I wanted it to. But at one point, I remember the one thought that I was thinking about this messy detail that showed up. And so how liberating to know that even though it's a messy detail, it is one that I created. And if it's one that I created, then I certainly have the ability to recreate in a way that is preferred.
That sounds really inspiring and wonderful. I'm looking forward to reading it. Tell me about the concept of this sort of the messiness, and I think that's necessary for so many people to understand what happens when you do get a mix of things. And especially, perhaps you're not looking at it exactly like I do. So I'm interested in finding out what the difference is between my thoughts and yours in reference to this, because I think everyone has their own individual way of seeing life. When you decide to generate a creation and it holds a certain vibration because you're putting in all kinds of gratitude and love and thank you so much for this experience, and you're consciously, deliberately trying to generate an experience. Well, my experience is that sometimes you can't get there from here without everything turning upside down. In other words, in order to bring you that vibration, everything needs to change. Your whole life suddenly goes topsy-turvy. Mm. Have you ever experienced that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, as you're talking about the messy vibrations, there's two stories in here specifically that come first to mind. One, and maybe the most telling of these, was about 2 months after my divorce, our basement had flooded 2 feet of water. And because it takes some time for a basement to flood that much, there was a flooding all over the area, and so the city had shut down the sewer. So 4 days of rising water, 4 days of falling water. Needless to say, it was a disaster. And it took 4 or 5 months of deconstruction and reconstruction to rebuild the whole thing. And certainly in a year when I was emotionally raw and overwrought as a single mom taking care of two babies. And it would have been easy to just hang my hat and say, this was a total mess. But I'll tell you, and you can read it here in the book, how many, and cliche as it may be, how many blessings in disguise came from that flood? How many things got resolved better than they could have ever been had that not happened? Right, and I've heard this before as well with, I can't recall the title of it now, but there's a book, and there are others who have spoken about even diseases like cancer being the greatest gift they've ever received, right, because of everything that was born from that. And I think when we look at it, you know, a great flood, a cancer or a divorce or these messy, as we call them, things that are happening in our lives, it's only because we have such limited perspective of the greater picture of what it's actually offering us. And it was in that moment where I could, and I remember that moment, sitting at the top of the stairs the morning after watching the water continuing to rise, thinking, what is the gift in this for me? And it's continuing to redirect thoughts that align with what the greater good is, that allows it to unfold with more grace, with more ease, with more appreciation for all that is, for the you know, I mean, it even takes, right, Pam, I've been doing a lot of gardening lately. It's grounding and nourishing and all of the above, but it even takes manure to grow a bountiful harvest, right? And the energies of these, what we've been calling here on this show now, messy situations, really have such potential to transform into the greatest miracles of our lives.
Give me, if you don't mind, an example. As you're sitting there looking at this water rising at the top step, and you've got these babies and you're all alone, and you're facing this extremely difficult situation, and you say to yourself, well, this has got to be for the greater good. Something's got to come out of this.
Yeah.
Doesn't your brain say, what are you talking about? I mean, what is it that came to you in that moment? Did something inspirational and spiritual come to you in that moment, or did you just suffer through it and it came to you later?
You know, I think this is really where my passion for my work with this book and where it's continuing to go from here comes from, because my faith in things always working out is so strong that even myself, I question where it comes from. Why is it in that moment that I didn't lose all hope of things being any better? And it comes from having done the work over years and over a lifetime of collecting evidence of when it did work. It always worked. And so sitting there at the top of the stairs, I didn't know how it was going to get better, but I knew that it was because I had enough in my back pocket that showed me that it always did resolve, that I could go off faith at that moment, right? But not everybody's there, and I acknowledge that. Yeah, but this is where I really, and I'm getting goosebumps now talking about it, this is where I really want to reach out to all of these readers and take that moment to with them. And for everyone who sat with a cup of coffee reading my book, I wish I could be there across the table, just as my former student and I were there in the inception of this, sharing our stories. These are mine, but it's really just half of a dialogue. It's what the other, you know, reader can bring to this with stories of their own lives. And really searching back for, I didn't think it was going to work out at that point, but it really did. And at this point, things got hairy, but man, look how this resolved. And doing that work of harvesting these examples that prove to ourselves that there really is only a stream of well-being and it's always working out for us. That's what I believe is the bridge between where we're standing now, feeling victim to circumstances, and the other side of that bridge, which is feeling really empowered by our ability to attract, and feeling really empowered, even, you know, Esther Hicks, when she speaks, has this great way of saying, when something great shows up, I say, I did this. And when something not so great shows up, I say, I did this too. Don't tell anybody. You know, and if we could all get to that place where no matter what shows up, we're so excited about the fact that it showed up because we pulled that in. What could we do with that knowing and then consciously direct it? But I still firmly believe that empowerment comes from doing the work of looking back and saying, in my lifetime, here's where that happened, of gathering that personal proof.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you'll read at the end of that chapter, there's so many things that would not have been uncovered were uncovered because of that flood. And the greatest of those was the discovery of a vent that had gone two stories up from the basement directly to the baby's room. And he had been breathing mold since the day he came back from the hospital. I called the lawyers, I called the pediatrician, I called everybody I knew when I found that the rehabbers had kind of covered this up in order to, you know, not expose this the way they had reconstructed the basement there in not the proper way. And my pediatrician gave me the best reassurance, which was he's only breathed mold for 2 years of his very long life. But you found the source. And without that flood, we'd have never found that, and he'd still be breathing it to this day.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't have known that sitting up at the top of the stairs, right? But when there are things going on that don't look the way they are, I can think back to a moment like that because that's mine and it lives in the cells of my body. And everything in me can calm down and know that the universe is really working for me and not against me in any moment. I just wish that so much for everybody, that they could have their own proof to draw upon in those moments with the knowledge encoded in their cells to make it through, knowing that everything is always working out.
That's a lovely wish, and I'll add to that wish and say I wish that for our listeners as well. I do have a question for you in reference to, I mean, what you're talking about is faith. You're talking about faith in terms of, okay, I know for sure, and this is like speaking to myself as the concept of faith, I know for sure that whatever happens, I've created.
Mm-hmm.
So if I choose something consciously, I know that it's going to eventually come into my life. And even if I haven't chosen it consciously, I know that there is some, I call it riding the storm. You begin, mm-hmm. you begin something deliberately, and then all hell breaks loose, and you end mm-hmm. up growing through the manure in your garden, and
mm-hmm.
you come out the other side and say, oh, well, see, I proved it to myself again. The problem is, the way that I see it is that you are smart enough, or perhaps you have enough faith, that when you were riding the storm and you were at the lowest low, you had the faith to say, it's going to be okay, and I know this is for the best. Where a lot of people get their attention stuck on the manure. And when you shift your attention and say, okay, well, look at how terrible this is, and I feel bad for myself, you end up losing the good that could have come out of it. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, and it's...
I was going to ask you, can you give our audience any suggestions to not go there, to get to the end result?
Yeah. You know, it's part of the reason why I took these stories to the point of publication. Because I tell you, there, you know, in here, there are stories of unconscious creation. There are stories of deliberate creation. There are both things that I didn't quite know I was creating at the time that I was doing it, and things that later on in the later chapters, then when I finally get focused and put my mind to it, I could create with some consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
But they're vulnerable because they're private thoughts that, well, and really truly when we consider the way law of attraction works, nothing is private, because the what you were thinking is there right in front of you. Everybody knows what you were thinking because of the life you're living, right? But to share these stories so that others can peek into what it looks like for one person's private thoughts to create and manifest. They're not all stories, manifestations I'm quite so proud of. And yet they're all manifestations that are so empowering, were so empowering for me personally. And if this gives readers and listeners the invitation to do the same work for themselves, to look back at the private thoughts, they don't have to publish, they don't have to share it, right? But to look back at what was I really thinking, and was there a moment when I noticed a thought or a feeling or a belief that drew this in, they for themselves will start to feel just the beginnings of that wave of empowerment. And so, you know, there was one chapter I was going to tell you, you know, as I'm telling you about the proudest manifestations ever, that I was going to entitle something to the effect of, if I created this crap, imagine what I could create if I thought about it. You know, and then,
I like that.
Absolutely. And I, even the crap that I create empowers me and inspires me to just focus more. It is the mm-hmm. most unnatural, and I don't say that with judgment, and it's certainly normal to want to look at the manure because it's sitting there right in front of us. To want to look at it and say, oh my gosh, woe is me, how did this happen? And oh, I tell you, Pam, when I woke up to this idea, I was knee-piled deep in a heap of manure, and it stank really bad. But the way I understand that is that each thought has some momentum, right? And the 17, now as a mathematician, numbers are very personal, near and dear to me. 17 is a number I'm extremely passionate about. I knew the book had to have 17 chapters even before I had 17 chapters written. And if you hold a thought for just 17 seconds, and if you really, I mean, being on the radio, you know time pretty well. If you hold 17 seconds, it's not a short amount of time. But if you can hold a single thought for 17 seconds, another thought that's similar and just beyond the edge of that will come to join it. And if you can do that four times in a row, then the original thought that you had after 68 seconds has all the momentum behind it, as Abraham would say, with the power that creates worlds to support you. And 68 seconds is a long time to hold a single thought in focus, but it works, right? And so there's a momentum that these thoughts start to garner the longer we focus on them and concentrate on them. And there's a momentum to the thought about the pile of manure. So when you interrupt that momentum with a new thought, like it's just a thought and a thought can be changed, you interrupt the momentum that's already going. And so, you know, think about if you've got a big, heavy snowball rolling down the hill and somebody gets under it and says, you know what, I'm going to stop that snowball at the bottom. And you're going to get plowed over and you're going to get snow in the face and you're going to get knocked down. And this is what happens when we try to stop the momentum of negative thoughts. But how
We're going to just take a quick break.
Okay.
Just want to let everybody know you're listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. If you want to find out more about this radio show, you can go to www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. Seema, why don't you go ahead and give everybody your website name so they know how to find out more about your book?
Yeah, absolutely. You can check me out on Facebook at Seema T. Chandarana. That's T as in tango. And I'm also on www.seema, S-E-E-M-A, Chandarana, C-H-A-N-D-A-R-A-N-A.com. So friend me on Facebook. You can follow me at Twitter, at Seema Chandarana as well. And I would love to connect with you and hear back.
Excellent. You know, I have a question because I noticed that you have two children. And, you know, looking at things from the eyes of children is an amazing way to learn. What is your lessons learned from writing this book as far as, you know, learning the way life works and attraction and stuff like that, that you're passing on to your children? And what would those look like?
My biggest lesson learned, and that I strive in every moment to pass along to my children, is that you cannot fake it in terms of the law of attraction. How you feel, what you believe, what you focus on manifests in every case. This is irrefutable proof that it happens. And so living by example is the best gift and teaching that my children and I collectively actually share with each other. There are no secrets, right, to what we're thinking because it's all right there surrounding us. And so if I can pass along any bit of wisdom about what I've learned from Law of Attraction to them, it's that you can manifest anything you focus on, and that what your life is simply a mirror of what's happening within. So if you're looking out in your life and you love it, go on. If you're looking out in your life and you don't love it so much, start by shifting what's happening inside.
And I think Pam had actually covered this with you earlier, but I'm going to go ahead based on that idea that you just put out there. know, what happens when you start in that snowball avalanche of falling down, of just being in a negative thought process that you know is holding the 68 seconds? Or, or did you say 68 seconds? Is that what we were talking about as far as holding a thought? Yeah, so you get stuck in that process of, you know, lack of abundance or fear-based thinking. And, you know, when you get caught in that, I mean, what's your, when it comes to what you've learned so far, what's your emergency parachute to kind of pull you out of that?
You know, as you're talking about that, I still have this, it's almost a Charlie Brown image of being at the bottom of that hill with the snow pile on top of me because the ball has just exploded all over my face, right? And so my first reaction is to laugh a little bit, say, oh my gosh, here I am underneath this big snowball, and good for me that I stopped it from rolling any further. And so maybe this is kind of a count your blessings. Even in the midst of what seems to be the worst tragedy, there's somewhere in there something to appreciate, something. Be it the smallest thing you can find, it matters not. Find anything, one thing to appreciate about the current situation, and that will reconnect you to who you really are. Appreciation is the quickest bridge.
So are you talking about trying to understand the lesson that's unfolding, or are you talking about going directly to some form of gratitude?
Some form of gratitude, right? I think at that moment, the lesson that's to be learned from all of that may be too far out of reach. But what's never out of reach is something, anything, even in an immediate environment that you can say, take it as small as I've got my breath. I can take a deep breath. I can control that. I'm so grateful for the ability to breathe. I mean, there's always some little link of gratitude that we can hook onto, and that kicks us right back to who we really are. From that perspective, you know, here, I'll give you a really personal example. I remember this one so vividly because it was September. School had just started again. The air was crisp, but the sun was out. It was so clear. The air just, you know, not a speck of interference or humidity, nothing. It was so clear that day. And my whole marriage had just exploded that summer. You know, it was the waking up in the manure pile. And I remember being so high, so excited about what was coming next, not because what I was in the middle of was fun. It was really difficult each day to get up and face all of that. But because as it was unfolding, I could see how each and every one of the little details and the pieces of my marriage falling apart was specifically designed just for me. With little pieces of puzzles from things from childhood, things from adolescence that were unresolved kind of mysteries that here were all revealing themselves in the explosion of the end of my marriage here. And I thought, I don't really know how these pieces connect, but I do know that there's such a correlation between them that this whole mess was designed just for me to be able to problem solve what this all means. And having such immense gratitude for the fact that everything I'd been asking about was attempting to reveal an answer to me through this, you know, event that was seemingly a disaster. So reconnecting with that little piece of gratitude, whatever it is that we can hook onto, and from that little hook, being able to gently, moment by moment, feel our way into the resolution of that. You know, because once that snowball has been stopped, once it has dissipated, then we have space. And we have time and we have energy to pick up a little handful of snow, pack it down, and begin to roll it. into something else that now we can consciously create and get momentum behind that's really going to be the greatest creation next, right? But until we are able to stop that initial swell of negativity, there isn't time, space, or energy to create something new. So finding the blessing in the fact that we've interrupted it with a new thought, no matter how messy it is right now, that it gives us the opportunity and the ability to recreate and redirect previously misdirected energies. You know, so what? That's also, you know, one of Abraham's favorites. So if something bad happens, so what?
Now, yeah, I noticed I'm actually going to kind of shift gears a little bit. And
yeah.
I'm sorry, Pam, did you have something you wanted to ask?
I'll let you go because I have a couple questions I'd like to ask. But
okay,
I'll let you finish your train of thought and then I'll jump in.
Yeah, I was actually just going to go in a different direction for a second, so I'll do that. And then, so, Seema,
mm-hmm.
you know, I noticed that you talk about how you connect with spirit, and
mm-hmm.
you talk about the fact that you do it while meditating, working in the garden, cooking, listening to music, and something like that. Can you tell me what that first experience looked like and, you know, how that kind of comes through to you now that you've come been doing it for a while?
Connecting with spirit?
Yeah.
My first memory of that, you know, and it goes back to the quote that I read at the beginning of the show, search back for evidence. We guarantee you'll find it, right? Because there's not a shred of evidence contrary to the law of attraction. The first memory I have of that was standing actually at my kitchen sink washing dishes, right? And so water is a great conductor of electricity. And this is why we get great ideas in the bathroom, in the shower, whatever it is we're doing, because water is running, and it allows this energy, this electricity of thoughts to flow. And I was standing at the sink washing dishes, and these examples were flooding into my mind, right? So the ones that you'll read about in here, these 17 stories, they just flooded. It was like an instant. At that time, I used to call it, I got a download today, right? Like all this information that I have stored somewhere and knowledge that I know but didn't have access to would download in these moments where I would be washing dishes or cooking, or it would happen a lot in the car as well. And I think what happens for me in those moments, Mark, is that I'm so absorbed in the activity that I'm doing that I become the activity itself. And it becomes its own sort of moving meditation because I'm so absorbed in the activity that I'm doing that my mind stops going so fast. And there, the gap between the thoughts becomes large enough that I have access to higher knowledge. And this is what I relate to as the connecting with spirit. I get information that my conscious mind it has too much static to receive. And so,
for me,
that was like gardening or getting out my yoga mat or cooking in the kitchen or taking a drive. But for each one of us, it looks a little different. Whatever it is that we're so, I think they call it in the zone or in the flow, right? Whatever gets you so much in the zone that you're absorbed in the activities that the mind stops thinking, then we have access to this higher realm.
Thank you. Go ahead,
mm-hmm.
Pam.
Okay. I'm going to shift gears on you again, Seema, and ask
sure.
you about the 17-second, 68-second rule that you have, which I really love that. If you can focus on a thought for 68 seconds, you generate enough energy to manifest it. Is that the idea? Tell me again what the 68 seconds actually does.
Yeah, so, you know, I was just reading, I was reading today a little bit about quantum physics. I don't know that that's a normal thing, but, and they were in this describing the science of energy and matter, right, and the interplay
right.
between those two, and that energy particles that they were observing, and not being a scientist, I can't give you the details on how they're doing that, but they're observing these energy particles, right, and what they found is that wherever they directed their gaze or their vision or their focus, these energy particles would come together kind of like gelatinously, is how they described it. And
right.
so it's whatever we're focusing our attention on begins to form.
Right.
So if you're not, right, focusing your attention on it, it's not forming. And so in those 17 seconds, it kind of, you know, I think of it as like moving from this thought form, which is a kind of airy floating energy type substance, into now I'm focused, it's a little gelatinous. I'm focused even more, and it's got some solidity into it. And 68 seconds later, it's manifest. Now, I'm not saying that you're going to see your Mercedes pop it up at your house if you stay with it for a minute and 8 seconds, but that in the vibrational essence of things, it is done. You know, this time-space reality that we live in is the edge of, it's the, really the leading edge of all of this thought form that is manifesting the world that we're living in, that we are actively creating with every thought we think. And so after those 68 seconds, it has formed. And now it's just a question of it catching up to where we are before you'll have the 5 physical sense ability to perceive it. But just because your eyes, ears, nose, tongue and fingers can't actually touch it yet doesn't mean it's not real.
Now, I guess the concept that I was looking at was, is the 17 seconds and the continued concept of holding it for a certain period of time, was it numerology? Was it neuroscience? Was it quantum physics? Where did you really put this concept together? Or was it a scientific concept, like the scientific experiments of the photons or the subatomic particles.
Yeah.
The idea, and I happen to teach this, is that when the scientist, everything is in a wave form, it's pure potential. Everything exists in many different positions. It's when you focus your attention, you choose the position, and it changes the subatomic particles or the photons from a wave into a subatomic particle, into a piece of something. So whatever you put your attention on becomes your reality, which is why I was talking earlier about if you're in the middle of this storm and you get your attention stuck on the storm, in the
mm-hmm.
middle of the creation, you sometimes miss the good part that it was moving toward because you take your attention off of it. I love the gratitude concept where if you grab a little granule of gratitude, it brings it all back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my classes, I teach what's amazing about this moment right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and you look until you find something. And I like the, you know, the your ideas about breathing and just the idea that I have a breath is wonderful. So I like the concept of the 17 seconds. I think that's beautiful, and I had a aha moment when you said it. So I'm really excited about this. The even though I've done it a million times, everybody has done it a million times, it's like having a scientific or a step that you know that once you've done it this many seconds, it's good. I like that a lot.
And then you can just step out of the way, right? And that's it. It's done. And you'll find, right, as you go back to search for your own evidence, here, I'll give you a great example, Pam, that just happened to me today. I was at the airport coming out here to New York City, and I was the very last person on the plane. The flight was delayed, but they hadn't updated the boards, and I thought we were still sitting, but they were ready to go. And then I heard my name on the loudspeaker, so I came running. And the last thing the guy says to me is, well, I'm glad you made it. And I had one thought getting on the jetway, which is, ooh, now that I'm the last person on, I won't get an aisle seat. Mm-hmm. And in the moment that I think, now I'm at the point where in the moment that I think something not wanted, I notice it and strike it and say, no, I'll get the perfect seat for me, whichever one that is, and it will be delightful. And I'll bet you, now I didn't time it, but I'll bet you it was probably about 17 seconds of carrying that thought onto the plane with me over to the one overhead bin that was open. That was my signal to sit there. I put my bag in, and I looked down, and, of course, it's a middle seat. But when I interrupted to get into the middle seat, the gal in the aisle says, oh, why don't I just move over? And I got my aisle seat. Right, and why is this? Because in the moment I had the thought, I'll get a delightful seat and it will be the perfect one for me, I didn't carry any contrary thought about that, or any interference. Right, and of course this was not something I cared very much about, so it wasn't something I ruminated or would want to ruminate or come back on, like the bigger things in life. But when we have a pure positive desire that goes out with zero resistance against it, it comes very quickly. 17 seconds, right? And that's all it takes.
And I love it.
Yeah.
I have one more question for you that I really want to make sure I get this in. I do readings, and I did a reading for a young man this afternoon who actually was very tuned into this concept of deliberately creating his life. However, when I did the reading, I saw that he had completely opposite paradigms. So he would experience one thing, and then he would experience another, and then he experienced one thing, and then experience another. For example, he wanted a girl, and he was only 20 years old, so he wanted a girl in his life that was kind of wild and edgy and sexy and amazing. But he also wanted a girl that was nurturing and caring and loving and stable, completely opposite characteristics. So he would get one that was really, he would get a girl like that, and then he was too wild and crazy and she didn't really care about him. So then he'd move to a girl that was very nurturing and caring and stable, and then he'd find that boring, and then he, you know what I'm saying?
I do.
So many people have completely opposite paradigms or belief systems about who they are and what they want. And when you go to create something with those conflicting issues, you really get sometimes messed up. What would you suggest to our audience experiencing that type of situation?
That there's always a reason behind why we want the things that we think that we want.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why he wants this wild and crazy gal, and there's a reason why he wants this kind and nurturing gal. And if we can place our focus and attention more on the reasons why it is that we want to draw those things into our lives, the universe has a easier time putting together the perfect compilation of what it would look like to satisfy all of our needs. And from our, as I call it, little mind perspective, we may not necessarily know what form that will take when we get there.
Mm-hmm.
So focusing more on the reasons of why it is that I want to draw that in, what is it that I would like to feel by drawing in this thing that I think that I want, gets us aligned with what's really going to satisfy us. And the universe has the ability, I mean, if we can imagine it, the universe undoubtedly has the ability to deliver it. And what I've found is 9 times out of 10, or maybe even 10 times out of 10, and these are the stories in my book as well, deliver it to us in a much grander, more satisfying, more fulfilling way than anything we could have possibly penned on paper.
Mm-hmm. I love that answer. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I think that's very insightful. So what you're saying, if I can reiterate what you just said in my own vocabulary, is that it really, your heart's desire sometimes is masked by desires that are possibly not as positive in terms of the way the world would see them. But if you look underneath it to why you would like to experience that and what you really want to feel by experiencing that, and you focus on that rather than what you think the end result should be, that oftentimes the universe will bring you something even greater than you could imagine.
And I would go out on a limb and risk saying that it delivers beyond what we could imagine in every case. It has a much broader perspective than we're able to invoke.
So I'll scratch the word sometimes.
Well, it's good, though. Yeah, and I appreciate your paraphrasing
always.
It, because there's always a different way to say things that connects with each person.
Yeah, well, it really helps me, I think, to just shift the verbiage a little bit and to make sure that I got it right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful. So, so you're a math teacher, and this is kind of a silly question, but I wanted to ask it anyway because it came into my mind earlier. Do you know anything about numerology? And do you know anything about numerology? Let's start there. Is it at all based on numerology?
What would you like to know? Absolutely. I mean, the way I like to say it, and I tell this to my students, is I have deep feelings for each one of the digits. I love them all. They're like my children, really. And every student, by the time they leave my class, knows which one's my favorite. Do I play favorites? I do have one favorite. I do, of the digits. But they each have their own vibration, right? And what I find so fascinating about numerology is that when I run somebody's charts, it's like a fingerprint. Right? No two people were born on the same day and have exactly the same name on their birth certificate. And when you consider that and all the information, the plethora that's there about how we chose our moment to come into this planet and what that means in terms of our lifetime spanning out, your numerological chart proves that you have such a unique and valuable perspective to add into this world. But you'll never find two charts the same. There's so many numbers. It's, you know, like one in a trillion that you'd have the same numbers as somebody else. It's such personally valuable information.
Do you do charts?
I do.
Would you like to give out your website so that people could contact you to do that for them?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the best way to do that is shoot me an email. My email is or on the website as well, or Facebook. Either way, you can find me all over there. There are two Seema Chandaranas. I'm the one in the United States, not the one in London. All right, so Seema, S-E-E-M-A, dot Chandarana, C-H-A-N-D-A-R-A-N-A, 17, at gmail.com. Or, like I said, you can shoot me a message on Facebook. You can come to my author's site there and leave a message. Or you can come to my website, and there's a Contact Me button there. So lots of ways to get a hold of me.
Yeah, right.
And I would also, Pam, before the show closes here shortly, I would also like to add that this, as we're talking numbers, there are three big numbers in a numerological chart. They come from your birth name and your birth date. All three of mine are an 8.
And wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. And
I was going to say, I want to thank you for being on the show. And it's great to hear from you. Thank you, Pam, for always being there. And good night, everybody.
Good night, Seema.
Thank you. Life is but a dream.